Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with KB Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Friday, everybody. We are here at the end of another week, start of the new weekend, time to kick back, relax, get rid of the week's stresses from the job. Well, let's just say this. Thank God for being here because it's been crazy all week, and we definitely had a nice, eventful last session. However, we're going to thank God for being here, and we are. Thanking Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio, currently with DinosaurRadio.com in New York City. You can hear Barry do his thing tomorrow night at 7 to 10 p.m. again on Sunday from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York with the best of live R&B events as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. Check out Barry's latest events at trackoneentertainment.web.com or right here on social media and Facebook. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, girl, get better so you can get back and join us. To Monster Miles, DJ Zomrek, Rodney Williams, and to that panelist and activist out there in Toledo, Ohio, who is the bomb, that is Mr. Zeddy Williams. Thank you all very much for having the girls back and doing this thing here. To my starting panelists, Mr. Patrick Irvine, Al-Tariq Atkins, Stalo Jenkins, Professor Carlton Jones, Darlene and Arlene, you guys are awesome. Thank you very much for all that you do on and off the air and in your own personal communities. I thank you very much. To my social media clan out there, and let's see if I got you all. I want to make sure I don't miss you. We have tonight's sponsor, Mr. Mark Pittman. Thank you all very much. And his two groups, the Real World Black News and Discussions Group and the Black History Suppress Group, to my brand new addition to the social media clan, the Urban Intellectuals with Patrick Irvine. I want to thank Marvin Young and the Capitalist N Group. I want to thank Linda Miller and the Black Love and Conversations Group, Sonny Gibson with the Black Mamba Group, my peoples, the On the Edge Listeners Lounge, you awesome guys, you, to Professor Jones and the What About Us group, and I think I've got everybody. All right, so you guys have been the bomb. Awesome, excellent. Thank you all very much. Before I go off into our topic, I want to first point out something that I think needs some special recognition. Those of you that remember the Trayvon Martin trial, remember hit one of their key witnesses, if not their star witness, Rachel Gentile. You all remember how they ridiculed this poor girl for her lack of understanding English, or at least being able to speak English clearly the way she was. Well, you know what? It's been a couple of years, and this woman has made it to graduation with better understanding of the language, having enhanced her academic skills. She can now read at a great level, where she couldn't read a letter before in cursive in English. Well, she can do all that now. So you know what? Team Zimmerman, go to hell. She did it, and that's what we're really about. So thank God for that, and I praise you, Rachel. You keep it moving, girl. You do what you have to do. Now, let's get into what we are going to be discussing tonight, and that will be part two of Deflecting from the Elephant in the Room of Black America. Now, we spoke last round about how satirical articles are now being used as a brand new deflection to keep us all distracted and, once again, calm and content in a state of chaos. Well, tonight I'm going to be speaking on two other articles, but we're not going to be speaking on the articles. Now that you guys have been with me on the last segment, you know exactly what I mean when I say that I'm bringing the articles up, but it's not the articles we're speaking about, because tonight is going to be the same thing. We're going to be speaking on not the article that I'm going to bring up, but we're going to be speaking on how deflection tactics were used in that and what hidden messages were in it and how it is that we really need to start opening our eyes and paying attention, sort of doing a couple of two steps and double glances before we start meddling into what face value is. So with that being said, I'm going to be going to our special break, and actually today it's going to be a little bit of a two-songer because we have to get a couple of guests in, and I want to make sure that everything is straight and cool with them. So let's give a little bit of honor to the weekend, and that will be with Thank God It's Friday. Be back in just a bit after this. One more song and a couple of words from our sponsors. Thanks, guys, for hanging out. Don't go away.
Thank you. Beyond the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Just a little bit of classics for you before we get started into this very serious discussion. All right, deflecting from the elephant in the room of Black America, part two. Tonight, our catalyst articles are going to be about the latest development on the 2006 situation of Kanye West, and that was one of the hosts for the Hurricane Katrina televised relief fund, where they were trying to get people in to donate money to, you know, like they do the Jerry Lee Lewis thing. And here's the situation. Kanye West was, I guess, not reading from the teleprompter, as all people do. Bunch of celebrities got together of all colors and cultures and different genres, and they got together to bring forth some relief, because you all know that storm was devastating and it was pretty much a massive wipeout down in New Orleans. Well, halfway through his speech, once he got his turn, Kanye started to speak pretty much from his own feelings about how he was feeling watching the victims be shown on TV and trying to get to safety. He also pointed out about himself that I feel like a hypocrite, because you know what? Sitting here shopping instead of making a donation first to them, I feel like a hypocrite. But now I'm going to call my business manager and I'm going to find out how much of the largest donation we can afford to send. That was said in his comments, as well as it's our people. Whenever our people are being shown in these television airings of this storm, they show a Black family, they call it looting. They show a white family scribbling around. They air it as they're looking for food. George Bush doesn't like Black people. He doesn't care about Black people. That's what he said. All right, you all know what happens there. You can't say things about white people. You can't say it about the president. So that sparked a whole big fire. So let's see what happened here. Kanye West said something that everybody were like, oh, okay, yes, you don't say things about the Bush family. Well, he did. They had George Bush responding. George Bush clearly stated, and I quote, "This was the most disgusting and sickening moment of my life. You could say you don't like the way I handle my business. You could say you believe that I'm responding slowly to certain things, but you call me a racist, and that's a whole other thing. I told Laura Bush that that was my most disgusting and all-time low moment." All right. Pause for dramatic effect. Then followed up with, as we probably all expected, here comes Kanye West with a follow-up interview. Well, no, let's start this. First, Kanye West said something and it was news. Then George Bush responded and that was news. Then Kanye came on and was interviewed about what he said. Then Bush came on and responded to the interview about what he said. Then Kanye West followed up with a follow-up interview, softening his words somewhat and, you know, showing a little bit of quote-unquote remorse. Not. And then Bush followed up, accepting the, quote, apology, end quote. Now let's look at what happens here. Here's where the deflections all begin. We got a couple of breakdown categories in this one, so let's get started. First, let's talk about the tactics that we used. Are we ready? First of all, if this was supposed to be a heartfelt reach out to America to get help, because the Red Cross had gone as far as they could go and were going as far as they could go, but there was a lot more victims and a lot more damage done than the resources of the Red Cross could provide any relief for. So, of course, naturally, we need to reach out to people all over the world to see what we can do here. All right? So, if that was the case, ladies and gentlemen, why in the hell would you include on your roster of MCs Kanye West? Take what I mean here, okay? Yes, Kanye West is a big name. I'm sure a lot of you people who are not listening or seeing the between the lines are sitting there going, well, what the hell is she saying? Of course we're going to use Kanye West. Kanye West is a very big name. Yes, but with that very big name comes very big reputation of, wait for it, controversy. Now, if there was ever a time that you do not want controversy in the middle of something, is when you're trying to have a fundraiser for things such as the Hurricane Katrina Relief Fund. So, you're going to tell me that all of these big media mogul, business-minded, sharp, savvy people didn't have an agenda when they picked, of all people, a black rapper that is known for his troublemaking, known for his untimely, outrageous rants. They're outrageous, but don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. It's not like they're untruthful. Just that he always picks the stupidest time to do that and the weirdest ways to deliver them. But with all that being said, if this was a fundraiser for such a cause and you were so much in care about these poor little black victims that were down there being swallowed up by Mother Nature's flood, you're going to pick a guy that everybody knows will mess your event up if he has to, who, by the own rapper's admission, he believes he's suffering with a mild version of Tourette's syndrome. All right. He's known for trouble, as I said. So, yeah, you really didn't know that this could possibly happen. Right. Tactic number two, everyone. Now, after they allowed Kanye West to get off just enough of the shock material on the air, what do they do? All right, what every good producer and director would do. Let's watch the tape. Well, all right, ready, everybody? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey, cut his comments down. Ready, ready? All right, cut it and move the camera over. So while he had just finished saying that, mind you, if you look at these tapes, there was about a 2-second, 3-second delay before they cut him short and flashed it over. 2 seconds, if he wasn't expecting that to happen, that there would have been a whole lot more time given to be in shock about the situation. Right, people, I'm buying that one. Anyway, so now here's the dramatic effect. After they cut him off mid-sentence, flash over to his fellow actor. Now, check this out. They made sure that they had this actor, another big name, look shocked and embarrassed at the camera after this whole thing was set, so that the world could see that even black people didn't like what he was saying. And who was that other person? None other than Chris Tucker, who immediately stopped for shock and then turned around and went right into his part of the teleprompted speech. All right, so we got to make sure that's up there. That's another little marketing factor right there, because you know what? Black guys didn't like it either, and it's one of those guys that do funny stuff like he does. Okay, part two. No, I said part two. Part three. Now we have the interview, because everybody in America needs to know what was Kanye thinking. Everybody saw this. All right. Now, of course, you can't have the goose without having gander. So now we got Kanye's version of the action. Let's go over to Mr. Bush, shall we? Now, Mr. Bush showed himself as, I resented then, I resent it now. It was the lowest thing in the world to say to me. It was the worst moment of my life. I can't believe he said that. I'm not a racist. I don't believe in that. I think everybody is entitled to have human equality. All races are equal. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm already upset that everybody thinks that I didn't do anything about the 911 situation. Now he's going to call me a racist, too? It was the most all-time low moment of my life. Forgetting the fact, Mr. Bush, that in the whole entire interview, you never once spoke about how badly that the worst moment of your life should have been at that moment, the victim's misery that was going through on the screens all day long. That had you really shown what you really were thinking, you might have said, I find that it was wrong. Yes, it was a personal attack on me, but that was not the time and the place to say such a thing when the victims of these families are in need of help. And they were doing something to make that happen. That's what a smart person who really wasn't trying to let himself see that he's a racist or doesn't really want the truth to come out or doesn't want anybody to portray him in that light would have said. Check your business factors, Mr. Bush. I think you messed up just a little bit. In the process of George Bush's first reaction, Matt Lauer allowed him to further look like the victim. He was appalled. He was resentful. Oh, my dear Jesus Lord, I think I drank a little more that day. How dare he portray me in the image of being a racist? I'm the President of the United States, for Christ's sake. At least I was at the time. The worst moment of my life was when Kanye West said, I don't like black people. Forgetting the fact that Matt Lauer tried to lead you into just clearing yourself up. And the only thing you could say was, in my book, I wrote down just how much the Hurricane Katrina misery affected me as well. That was just a horrible thing to happen. But that was the most all-time low moment of my life to be called a racist on national television. Dot, dot, dot. You forgot to finish your sentence if you wanted to look as good as you say. On national television for Hurricane Katrina Relief Fund. Hello, Mr. President, former. Now let's go to the next tactic, shall we? Now, of course, you got to have the follow-up interview where now Kanye has done exactly what Hollywood needs him to do. Let's go check you because you went a little too far in this one. We understand the controversy factor in your success story, Mr. West, but you can't go out there saying things about black, white people and sit around there and don't let nothing happen. You've got to clean that up. If you want your career in Hollywood to say something, you have to do. You can't really go over the edge in controversy about white people. You got to do it to your own. Now they interviewed Kanye about his actions and asked him, did he really feel that way? And they even showed George Bush's interview about what he said the first time, and they showed George Bush look like he was about to be in tears. I didn't see any tears coming. I saw anger. I saw, uh-oh, this guy exposed me. And what Kanye replied, and this is the way it went, ladies and gentlemen, would you apologize to Mr. Bush now? Do you think looking back now that you, you probably said a little, I mean, look at Mr. Bush's face when he said that. Look at what he said. Let me show you the clip again. Run that videotape back, will you? Do you see how, this is the most emotional I've ever seen the former president be. Did you see what he looked like when he read and heard what you said? Do you feel a little bad about that, Mr. West? Kanye paused for quite a bit and said, I can say that in the heat of the moment, in the heat of that moment, I didn't really have grounds to call Mr. Bush a racist. But you didn't, sir. You said he doesn't care about black people. That doesn't mean he's a racist. That's what the white people would say if they had said it in that way about blacks' rights. That's what they would have said, right? He didn't really say that. That's not what he said. He didn't say it that way. That's not what he said. So, now let me go to the reaction of the president to Kanye's reaction. He came to see me yesterday, and Mr. President, he's changing his tone a bit. No, he didn't. He said he might be suffering with baby Tourette's. It comes off the top of his head about what he's really feeling. He at the time, in the heat of that moment, maybe shouldn't have possibly come out saying the things he said, because at that time, he didn't have grounds to say or imply that the president was a racist. I didn't hear an apology. Actually, was cheering for that one, because I think that he had the right to say what he felt, and he should have said it. And you know what? Good for you. As much as I'm not a fan of Kanye, I can tell you right now, that's probably the most stand-up that any black icon has done in the face of everything that's going to come up against him for doing so. So good for you, Kanye, on that one. And the president, D-Mac, well, I appreciate that, because that, once again, here we go, ready? All right. I appreciate his moves, because you know what? It really was the most all-time low moment of my life. He gets to repeat that in something that was supposed to be the squash it follow-up interview. He got to repeat that. He certainly did. And he got to further say how depressed he was at the time. He got to further say what a victim he was. Now, before I move on to the next aspect, in the middle of all this, you know how YouTubers be copying the links and then they add their own little thing to it, and then they add their own version of the video, and they put the little captions in. Now let me tell you, in the middle of all this, just exactly how much we're going to go to the part that says the hidden messages and the misconceptions of it all. Okay? Oh, wait. Got to bring up one more. Here's the other tactic. Now we've got the president, who's been now cleaned up, looked like he's the victim, and yet again, it's one of those black people that's out of their way. You see how they are. They're the savages. They don't know how to act. This is how they do things on national TV, too, in the middle of a relief fund for their people. Now let's do the kicker. We have Mike Myers, a white actor, well-known producer, well-known actor, well-known filmmaker, right? Who released a statement of support in honor of Kanye's bravery for coming forth when, quote, the sign of power to truth needed to come out at a time where truth needed to be told. This is Mike Myers' work. Great. Wonderful. Very nice of you, Mike Myers. Too bad it only took you 8 years to do it. Where the hell was all the support at that time when Kanye was bouncing back and forth on people's interview couches trying to say he's sorry when he really wasn't, because he really felt that way? Where was all that bravery in telling him to go forth then? It all died down now, so now all you white people could come out and say something and it won't look too bad on you? I wasn't shocked and embarrassed when you guys took that picture of my expression. After he said that, I actually was proud of him. I was proud to be standing next to him when he put himself out there like that, because the truth needed to be told. Really, Mr. Myers? Thank you, 8 years later. He could have served a jail sentence by now. Where were you? But it looks good in the tactics, because now it looks like white people are coming forth too. The hidden messages. As I pointed out earlier, George Bush never, in his interview of feeling like the persecuted, henpecked, racist victim, never once mentioned the fact that he had any type of empathy, feeling, sympathy, or hurt by what was actually taking place with the floods of post-hurricane. He mentioned that while he, in the same breath, was advertising his memoirs book. If you look, read my memoirs, I actually said that Hurricane Katrina, the misery of it, was bothering me. Yes, it was. I said that. It was me. I did that. Yes, I did. But what Kanye said was the most all-time lowest hurtful thing anyone could have said to me. The next message, people, if you don't see what this means, Kanye, the most controversial, brave person to ever say anything he feels off the top of his head and not give a flying hell about who thinks what about it afterwards, really going to sit there and say, I'm sorry that I said that, and it didn't mean that somebody wasn't behind him going, listen, here's this check, Kanye. You want to be in Hollywood? I would suggest you go. Just bring it down just a little bit. Why don't you? Come on. You know you really can't say things about the Bushes. That's the president of the United States. What's the matter with you, man? We said controversy, dude. Not get out of your black realm. You can't do that. Come on, go down there and say something. Clean it up a little bit, bro. Make it look like you're remorseful. And he did. As remorseful as Kanye West can get. Next. Now let's go to the fun part, guys. This is the stuff I found on YouTube. They reposted the video clipping of George Bush and Kanye West follow-up interviews, okay? Now, on the posting of the one where Kanye was quote-unquote apologizing, they had a caption that said, "Now that's power." Joked about Kanye when he was giving his very much resistant apology, and underneath it, it said check. And then Bush came out and said, "Yeah, because that really wasn't something that should have been said. It was the lowest point of my life, and I'm not a racist. I never have been a racist. That's not it." And underneath this post, you put down, "Checkmate. Now that's power." Okay. All right. To that I say, listen, oppressors, if that's what keeps you from jumping off the roof, believe what you want to believe. All right, dudes? All right, panelists, if you're out there, I see one coming in. Let's get started, because I'm, this one's a good one. All right. Welcome to the show, Corey, you're on the air.
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening, KD. This is Al Tariq calling.
Hey, Al Tariq. How are you? Welcome to the show. One second before I let you start. Those of you that are listening, that's on my patrol, I fully expect that you will have to be on active duty. So please clean your weapons, shine up your stripes, and get ready for duty. All right. Starting with you, officer. All right. What's your take on this?
Oh, I thought you said you had to bring somebody else in.
No, I was saying that I just have to let the troll patrol go. We might be expecting the second half. So.
Yeah, that was what a brave act by Mike Dyson.
Really brave. Took him 8 whole years, you think? Wow.
You have to
and by the way, the reason why I brought it up is because that was just posted on May 24th.
Yeah, what a brave act.
How we
doing in the old school psych?
Yeah, I don't know.
And, I mean, for him to come out after all this time and say that is really, you know, is nothing that's really relevant. Everybody deep down that is truly conscious of, you know, of things being the way they are, already pretty much knows that, you know, even people that's afraid to say it, you know, and that's the thing that at the time it was said, even one of the comedians made a joke about it, said, you could tell when Kanye started making a certain face, he said, then he just bust out and said, Bush don't like white, black people, you know, and he said, he could see it coming, like, oh, no, Kanye, don't do it, you know, and I mean, it was a comedic thing that he said, but deep down it's really showing you that a lot of people feel that way and felt that way at the time anyway. But it's just that, you know, people are trying to uphold, as you would call, the peace or not mess up relations with people, you know, that's especially in higher places. So, you know, I commended that he did that. And that's what I've always been knowing. If you ask any people that's in the lower areas, you know, of so-called life or the poor, rather, you know, a lot of them feel that way. A lot of them especially feel that way. You know, and it's just that he said what I feel that the masses feel and have felt for many years. You know, they don't care. Why? That's why a lot of things in school is the way they are. You know, because the children don't feel cared for. So when you don't feel cared for and you don't feel the person not motivating you, you feel like they don't give a damn, a lot of time kids will just do what they have to, you know, and the results, and it's not a good thing, but it's a way that they can get attention by acting out, showing out, doing bad things even, you know, because our kids are not that bad like that. You know, but right. It's just so many things that goes on that makes them react in negative ways. And then when we can't express ourselves, especially as grown men or whatever, then these are the results that we get. And then you get delayed courage and all that type of stuff, like what his name, Mike Dykes, like what he did, because he was too much of a coward to stand up just like anybody else was, to stand up from the beginning and admit the fact. But if we always don't do like how you said and speak about that elephant, that pink elephant in the room, there's no way that true dialogue and healing can really truly begin, because you're denying it.
Absolutely. There is a panelist coming in. Hold on, I'll let you finish your point. One second. Welcome to the show, Carly, on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to the rest of the panel.
Good evening.
All right. Let me allow Al-Tariq and I to finish out this point, and I'm going to hear from you, okay? You're absolutely right, Al-Tariq. My problem with Mike Myers is not that he said the praise. My problem is it took 8 damn years. Like I said, he could have served a jail sentence by that time.
That's
it mattered right then and right there, right after the cameras shut off and the spotlights went down. That should have been set there, because I'm quite sure that one of those entertainment reporters found Mr. Mike on the red carpet or whatever and would have asked him about it then. I'm sure that they did at the time. You understand? So explain to me where was all this support and you know, hoorah for him then. That's when it counted. Not when he had already been through 3 or 4 different spin-around interviews between him and Bush, okay? And then said, it's like it's too little too late, in my opinion. Good to you. You feel that way, you might as well just stay back in the corner and clap lightly like you guys always do.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Deacon,
your take on the situation.
It's a big joke. Because is anybody making a big issue out of some of the things that have been said about President Obama and how he has been doing press conferences and have somebody in the audience that's a representative in with the United States government telling the president to shut up?
Oh,
has anybody looked at that, or has anybody made a big deal out of that when Kanye was only speaking the truth? Everybody knows there's no bright news that the Bushes as a whole family are racist anyway. And if you're out there listening, yes, I said it, and I'm not Kanye West.
Well, see, the thing is, as much as I brought up the article, I was really referring to the tactics that they use. I'm trying to get our people to understand how to stop just looking at what's splashed in big color on a news site somewhere. This is, listen, it's an old article, first of all, because Kanye said this back when the hurricane had just taken place. But everybody failed to bring up the part that I brought out of what he first said about himself. All right? He didn't just come out and start talking about everybody else. He was truly moved by what was going on. He said he had to turn away from the TV often. And instead of him facing it and looking at it and doing something about it, he was shopping before he decided to make a donation. He said that about himself. Nobody brought that up in any of the things that they spoke about. They spoke about only his comments about the dingbat. And I said, I never voted for you in the first place, so I really don't give a damn what you think. All right, I have to say, not one person, and understand, you guys have all heard me speak about Kanye West, and it's never been in a favorable manner. But I've got to give the guy his props on this one. This wasn't about him trying to get a spotlight for controversy. This man was upset with what he saw. He said the way they portray us on TV, they had a black family being shown in the debris and in the floods, and they called it looting underneath the captions in the news articles. Meanwhile, when they show a white family in the area doing the same thing, they said they were looking for food. Is this news, people? Has this not happened all the time?
Yes, it
does. When Trayvon Martin got shot for a hoodie, an Arizona, and Skittles, they tried to bring up the fact that as a 17-year-old boy, he was smoking pot. Big whoop. Your kids drink themselves to death from morning till night and get pissed off while they're stumbling drunk and throwing up if they can't get another one. And if they'd gotten shot, none of that would have came up. But not anybody is sitting up there in our community being mad about it in the right way. These articles were used. The whole topic, even Matt Lauer, who is the interviewer from the Today Show. That man, as much as I could hear that he himself is trying to show up that he doesn't agree with certain things while he's trying to say it, well, the people might think, no, no, guy, you're thinking it. You're trying to say it, but you're trying to hold on to your janitor's job. I got that. But the questions that he was asking the president was part of what brought up the fact that President Bush never referred to feeling bad about Katrina until he made a brief dismissive mention of it about his memoirs in the same breath that he was marketing his memoirs. Not one bit. And the more that Matt Lauer tried to come back to it, the more he dismissed it and went back to Kanye. That is what I'm speaking about, my peoples. I need you to see what I'm talking about from Wednesday on. If you don't start rising up and saying, I'm not accepting this garbage anymore. I got upset when we spoke about the satirical articles, when I was speaking about the fact that even Arby's didn't try to say, we need to get to the bottom of these junk journalists for the damage that they caused. They were saying that if anybody promoted it any further, they're going to take legal action against them. You can't blame a person who sat there and got it from somebody and talked about it. That's their right. They have the right to the First Amendment to speak about what they read. Your problem is to go find the people who caused the slander. But everybody wants to avoid the elephants in the room. This was a blatant marketing move. It was a strategic marketing move. This was the best thing that an advertising company could come up with. I could tell you that right now. First, as I said, do any of you believe that any of these people who put this telethon together didn't know all about Kanye's reputation? I'm going to ask you, smart gentlemen, do you really believe that when they decided to put Kanye on the list, they didn't know what they were getting into?
They knew. They knew.
Who doesn't know? By 2006, Kanye was all over the place, had said about 15 stupid rants, and everybody knows into that. So if you really and truly wanted this to go off as a heartfelt, true donation to really help people, would you really put a loose tiger in the room and don't expect that they're going to go after your guests? Who are you fooling? They knew exactly what they were doing when they put Kanye on there. So they brought him in. Because they knew controversy would happen, and they knew controversy brings attention, and they knew the attention that was in a negative light could be blamed on the big, wild, screaming, troublemaking, controversial black artist. So go buck wild. And they just went to cut the mic and cut the camera, and they knew exactly how to flash over to the shocked expression on Chris Tucker's face. And Chris Tucker was looking as if, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to act shocked now? Oh, okay, here now. Oh, got it. Yeah, got it. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they didn't go to the next white host on the list. They went to Chris Tucker. Why? Because Chris Tucker is a very big name in his own right. He's a black actor. And he's probably cool with Kanye West. So if America sees that even a whole black artist was shocked and embarrassed by that, of course President Bush is going to look like the victim. Of course he is. And now blacks get another strike. You see what I'm talking about? You can't let them do anything. And I'm going to say this again to all of you out there going, oh, what is she saying? If you are not one of them, then the shoes don't fit you. If you are one of the really good people who really and truly do believe that everybody's equal, then stand up and do something, not 8 years later, like damn now. And don't wear the shoes that don't fit you. Then you won't trip or have corns. And to those of you on my community that are sitting up there going, she's always talking about stuff like that, it's always negative. It's negative! It's negative! Hello? It's not a pretty picture, people. I can say it in sign language. It's not. It's real. Guided missile. either get the hell out of the way by opening up your eyes and awareness and doing something, or stand there and get blown the hell up. I don't know what to tell you any further. Because as I said on Wednesday, I am sick and tired of our youngsters growing up to nothing. Because we're too scared to pick the ball back up. Because we'd rather sit there and take that carrot, like I said, one extra zero. We don't mind. Well, what's a kid without a father in the black community anyway? Big deal. I'm getting paid, bro. What does it mean? You've got to get it together. You have to get it together. We have way too many freedoms, liberations, possibilities, options that our forefathers and mothers fought for. Some of them were maimed because of it. Some of them died with half their limbs. Many of them died with memories of tragic loss and grief because they lost their families. Because they had to stand by under a whip or a gun or some axe so that they can watch their wives be raped and not be able to do anything. Possibly because by the time that they would decide to fight, the masses have already cut off their limbs and feet. Do any of us think of that when we're sitting up there talking about blank? And I don't know about you, but I'm making $250K a year with me and my lady. I'm hard because we need to be. I'm hard because it's hard for us. And if we don't fight hard with hard, but hard with brains, using our God-given abilities, resourcefulness, natural regality, becoming who we once were, honoring our forefathers and what they did and dealt with, valuing what's around us and what will always be there when after you run your mill and now white Hollywood doesn't want you anymore. Whatever little perceived privilege you have gotten from them when you made their P&L sheets look better. When that's over, guess who's going to be the ones taking you back? If we don't get it together, this plan will not be a plan anymore. It will be a reality. What are our children going to grow up into? How many more dollars and clicks and likes are we going to keep giving these junk journalists or these journalists who clearly don't mind putting us in a bad light no matter what our good qualities are? Rachel John Teal, tell me how widespread an article that was. Did you know about it? Did anybody on this panel here read about it? Video posted about a genius young kid, young black child, that was playing the violin to Pharrell's Happy all the way through, stopping, without reading. A violin, that's not the usual choice for our people in instruments, you know that. This boy was reading music and playing an actual acoustic instrument all the way through a very famous song right now. And I did not see 550,000 likes like I would see if they were talking about Blue Ivy is the Satan's daughter's name. When do we give a damn about what we have, not what we aspire to have based on false images put out by people who used us to get there and don't give a damn about us when they get there? To this day, Jay-Z's whole success story is how he was a Brooklyn Projects resident who struggled and doesn't know where it went. I don't see one black funded anything that he's given the black community. Not a Negro college fund, not a partial scholarship, not an internship nowhere in his big grand company, not a chance to a striving, aspiring young rap artist trying to grow up and be just like him. I haven't seen it. Those of you who follow him like a cult, do me a favor. If I'm wrong, correct me. But I will say, I saw Kanye's side right here when he stood up and still said what he had to say. And his apology, you dumb idiots out there thinking that, you know, white power checkmate. No, no, he didn't apologize. Read between the lines, all you great little scholars, you. This is disgusting for people to try to do this to one particular group of people. Because they're in fear of us, not realizing that they just let us breathe. They'll benefit from blending in and seeing what it is we have to offer. And instead of noticing how successful we could be and trying to overtake and conquer, because once you conquer, you don't know what we know. So guess what? You ruin it all the time. Now it's a write-off. Now you can give it back. Now you can just sell it off to the next person and see what they could do with it. And then as soon as they do something with it, you're going to try to shut them down and get it back. Is that working for you? Our people get it together. Look where we're at. How long has it been since we've been sitting up there like dogs to a sick bone with our tongue hanging out, dripping the drool in the whole nine for whatever we could do for one day to act like them? Has it been working for you? How many days do you have to close your eyes and pretend that you're something you're really not so you could pretend the elephant is not in the room? And I'm going to keep referring to that because that's exactly what it is. How many articles are you going to waste your time on doing 96 hours of finding out it's a hoax and they're sitting there going, you see what made them do? How many stupid self-degrading cultures are we going to adopt as our own signatures before we get it? How many more broken education programs are we going to accept? How many more unfair standardized tests are we going to be able to accept? How many more stupid programs showing our mothers, grandmothers, and great aunts and children coming up to look like they're in the middle of nothing but a broken, chaotic home? How many more Stevie J's and Jocelyn Hernandez's do we have to sit there and watch as what was portrayed as our people before we get tired of supporting the bullshit? Excuse me, French on the air. When are we going to get tired of it? Any more trolls do we have to hear come on the air for 2 minutes of fame calling people niggas because it seems to be that with all their Ivy League, all their little Ivy League educations, that seems to be the only word they can remember. At least their phonetics are pretty good because they said the real one, nigger, and they've said it quite a couple of times. Another panelist coming in, ladies and gentlemen. Let me join them in. Hold on. Welcome to the show, Coley. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Boo. What's up? That's
how
you
doing? How
are
you? Hi, panel. This is
Darlene. Hello,
Darlene. Hi. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Katie, you know what? You have covered all the bases, my love. After hearing what you have to say, like, there's really not much left to say because it's right there on the table, no doubt about it. And it's going, and the thing is that we do know that it's going to continue. And I always hear them say it's going to get worse before it gets better, but I'm hoping it gets better now that it's at its worst.
Wow, that one I like very much.
I truly feel like, when are they going to run out of energy? When are they going to become humanized? Because, you know, I look at it and, like, I'm not perfect, but I can't stand. It hurts me to see anybody suffer. It wouldn't matter what color they were. So you have the mentality that you can watch somebody suffer, bleed, get cut, shot, whatever, or even kill them. You know, that's something that I don't have. I can't even connect with a spirit like that. you know. I need to just briefly say, like, people, this is really going on. The other day I was standing outside in front of my building, and there was this young Caucasian girl that came on the block, and she was accompanied by two blacks. And it appeared to me they were a team, they were all together, but I think they just threw her as the fish in the pond. But for me, it was a slap in the face. Because she walks up to me and goes, "Good afternoon." And I said, "Good afternoon to you, too." Now, I looked down at her feet, and she got on a cast. She hopped toward me. I mean, they had her out here with a cast on, trying to represent our black children. Not out, and even though they're in another country, they still are black children. But my thing is this, like, you are soliciting people in the hood, per se, quote unquote, for their hard-earned money. When you guys have 37 rooms and you don't even know what 35 of them look like, but you come into our domain where we live in these little wall-to-wall spaces. I'm only 5'1", and I can't even lay down in my tub. You know, they shrunk all our rooms or the apartments with no kitchen, no dining area, no. I mean, they are snatching everything. If it wasn't for sin and a shame, we probably wouldn't even have a kitchen to eat in. But she walks up to me and says to me, "How are you today?" And I said, "I'm fine. How are you?" She said, "Well, my name is so-and-so-and-so-and-so, and I'm here representing the black children of Africa." I looked at what? Whoa. You're representing who? The poverty in Africa, whatever one of those countries. And I looked at her and I said, "You really got the nerve to ask me that? When we got so many black children here suffering?" I said, "That paper should have Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, Queens on it. Not Africa and all those other countries. Y'all are always in something. Y'all are always trying to do something. Y'all always trying to take, like, y'all just have not taken enough from us that y'all got to have this Caucasian chick walking around with a damn cast on in the hood trying to solicit people's money to feed some children in another country when I can look right up the block and see like 17 hungry children?"
Mm. Exactly.
I said, this is just what I said. "Why would I give you my money to feed children? I love children, but we're here, and y'all always trying to do something for somebody else. I don't see nobody trying to do nothing for us." I said, "Get your ass off my block." So she looked at me and she said, What apartment you live in?" And I told her. But I said, "You ain't ringing no bells over here. You're not ringing no. You might as well take your ass on down the block." And I meant that, because that was like a slap in the face for me. Even though, like you said, Katie, you, instead of looking at what was presented in front of you, look at the whole picture.
Right.
Because what you see, that's not all it is. There's always more to it than that.
Yep.
How dare you?
I think about a lot of things. Like a lot of these, we spoke about like the fast food chains that sit there and say they're giving food to, you know, like these so-called charities that give homeless food. Here's the deal. There are a lot of your employees that you know you're not paying well enough that have families that can use it first. You understand? Now, here's my situation. I'm not saying for these employees to deliberately make too much so that it could be wasted. I'm not saying for these employees to take, you know, pounds and pounds, unless, of course, there's a person with a large family that could use it. But what I'm saying is, why would you sit there? Now, you're saying that you're giving hungry people food. You know damn well that even during business hours, there's a certain expiration time where that food is not allowed to be on the counters, on the shelves, nothing to be sold. You have to take it out and count it as waste if it's not sold. However, many of these establishments believe, you know, that's what they say, but we know it's not really going to spoil. At the end of the night, you're going to sit there, have them wrap it up, wait for some guy to come through all of your floors to pick it up. When it's been sitting there waiting for whenever he gets there, then he has to wrap it up. Then he has to wait for that charity to show up. That's another extra amount of time to wait, as if the food is in a cooler or warmer while this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to get it there, down the block, find parking wherever they're at, distribute it, and then these people get it. So by the time that it gets there, you've already counted it as garbage. You would fire an employee over it.
Yes, they will.
And you want to talk about shipping things out to other countries. Not that, like you said, we don't care that that's happening. But before you can go out there and be charitable to help other people with their problems and you're at home, I can't help you get a house if I'm behind on my own rent.
Exactly. I told her, there's not only hungry children. There's hungry adults. There's
absolutely
hungry veterans. There's homeless people. There's people who fought for this country and don't have a place to live because the government has not kept their word with them. They came back damaged. Now they, because they're damaged, like they're not worthy, but they were worthy when they were on the line.
And the crazier they were, the better.
Okay? And then they feed them, they get hurt. And it's crazy to me because I'm going to tell you something. I went through a list of the wrestlers because I like wrestling. And I just happened to sit down. I heard the Ultimate Warrior had passed away.
Yeah,
so something
wow.
Something clicked to me. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go down the line. I want to see how many of these are wrestlers died from drugs, alcohol, pills. Do you know, I read through like 400 of them. Do you know, like, it was 300 of them, no, like 200 of them that was under 30. Either they committed suicide or they died over drug overdose.
Wow.
But this is what they do. They get them and the peer pressure to have their mother and father love them per se. When we love our children naturally. We don't tell our children, like, if you don't make it to the Grand Concourse and set off the mountain and fly in the air and hit the moon, and that we disown you.
Right.
You know?
We don't
and I just it just made me feel bad because they were babies, and all of them, for the most part, died a drug overdose because of the pain that they receive in the ring, because it's a physical contact sport, but it's very dangerous. They don't care.
And then we have them getting into these controversial articles, as I've been mentioning for the last couple of times, where now there's a subject of yet more pressure because, you know what, that game is still in the play. They'll promise
our people in particular more money than they've ever seen in their life, not because they couldn't do it on their own or know how to save on their own, but because whatever options are out there to start getting that money to start saving, that society is stopping it from happening because we can't get to it. Once we start putting not just the money, but our natural abilities together, all in one pot, that's it. We'll be a power force that would do to them what they've done to us, as Professor alluded to last segment. The type of fear you have and the paranoia. No, that wasn't Professor. That was Patrick that actually spoke that. When you're a cheater and you swear to God that every little thing you've done when you were cheating, when that person does it, they must be doing the same. There's another time list coming in. Let me bring them in. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos Phillippe Jones or Stelo Jenkins, caller from D.C.
Hey, you're late.
All right. Good evening, Professor. All right. God bless you.
I've been listening.
All right. We were speaking on the, it's an old article, but the latest response is actually brand new, and that was the 2006 controversial outburst from Kanye West during the televised Hurricane Katrina relief, where he stated that George Bush doesn't care about black people, and then that sparked off everything. Well, why I brought that up now is because only, what is today, the 30th? Last week, Mike Myers, if you guys don't know who that is, that's Austin Powers, the Shrek guy, the guy who plays Shrek. He also was the dark-haired guy in Wayne's World, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was the person that was co-hosting that particular part of the speeches with Kanye West, and he had this expression on his face that the news captured as, was Mike Myers shocked and embarrassed by what Kanye said standing next to him? Well, Mike Myers came out last week and said, no, I just want to put it to rest that that's not what it was. My expression wasn't of embarrassment. I was actually super proud to be standing next to Kanye. He was the only person who was brave enough to speak power, truth to power that needed to, when truth needed to be spoken. And my thing is, very nice of you 8 years later.
Right.
So my question is, do you feel this is yet another thing where they're helping us to try to be distracted and scapegoated so that we can deflect from the elephant in the room, which is the big master plan?
Yes, I do. And, you know, I think it's another example of how no matter where we get in these societies and our icons, if we look to them, when we look to them as examples, we shouldn't even look to them as idols as far as how they conduct themselves in character, but rather we got to look at them like, you know, warnings, you know. When you look at that, it's an example of how at this moment in time, in this period in time, it's not like, you know, during the abolitionist period where there was a lot of white people who were capitalizing off of the abolition movement, forming organizations and doing things. And there was a lot of white people who were actually in support of the racist struggle. Now that we're in this false post-racial society, you can't look to the other side to support our agenda or our progression or anything, you know, that would benefit us right now, because we're in a hyper-competitive society, first of all, hyper-competitive, and we encourage, you know, mental illness, for real. We encourage people to be really egocentric and individualistic here in this society. And because of all of that, you know, there's absolutely no way in today, 2014, we can look towards someone to, okay, yeah, like you said, he said he was astounded and proud of Kanye for speaking up. But he's saying that 8 years later, I mean, it just shows they're not going to stand up for you until it's cool to stand up for you. Mm-hmm. They're only going to do things out of acceptance. You know, the thing is, I think, and I, you know, it's been on my mind a lot lately, that one way that I've been able to tell the truth from the fake is that people that they claim allegiance so fast just to fit in, typically are the fake. And I find that society or that culture, you know, that the majority American society, I find that to be a very get-with culture. I find that culture to be very, very, oh, if it's acceptable by everybody, I'm not gonna make waves, you know. They don't make waves, okay? We make waves, okay? Don't think the majority of American society does not, you know, make progress and change. We make change, you know. They don't do anything. We do it all. You know, it's kind of funny. They don't work the field. We do the field. You know, we did it all, do it all, invent it all. And it's funny, it just shows you some more. You know, we sometimes we get too big and we get too elitist that then the money comes in, and when the money comes in, all of a sudden we want to show our status by rubbing elbows with the majority of American society. And when we do that, you know, we just fooling ourselves because it's 2014 and ain't no more. Who was the guy that took interest in Frederick Douglass? We don't have those types of abolitionists anymore. Those white men who are gonna, you know, encourage you to be the best you can for your own people. No, we don't have that. We have the new type of American society that just wants to YouTube everything, wants to watch people murdered, wants to care only when everybody else cares. You know, we have these things. And so one thing that we should probably, we should probably shy away from is looking towards the majority of American society to support, encourage, you know, and show us, you know, to be anything of like. You know, because they typically always disappoint us. So since they're gonna keep disappointing us, let us bless ourselves. That's all I can say on that.
I'm gonna say something here. Is this everything you said is on point? But once again, and you guys know how my philosophy goes, we are back to this. You know all this already. Some people truly don't, though. I mean, really, I think, you know how I believe I've seen this in a lot of my ancestors because they're before me, but I'm not speaking way back into the 18th century by any means. I'm speaking about my grandfather. I'm speaking about my dad. I'm speaking about even my great-grandfather as far back, based on stories my grandfather told me because he was dead before I knew him. But I will say this, okay, we know this. But I've seen us get to the point where we start trying to convince ourselves of the reality we've tried to create to make the pain better to live with. But we can't do that anymore. You know, the bird, the ostrich, whenever fear comes to him, he buries his head in the sand. Meanwhile, his ass is out, so if somebody's firing at him, he's going to get shot anyway. You understand what I'm saying? Take a listen, and what I'm saying, this is what we're doing. The elephant is in the room, people. The guided missile is headed right for you. Now, it's been headed right for you for some time. Only back then, we had a couple of places we could dodge and put up a little wall to. We know this is happening. We know what they're doing. We're watching it happen, and we're supporting it. Because we're too afraid to understand how we not supporting it saves us money and gives us money. Nothing they're giving us, they're already cutting every damn thing. They want you to go to school. They allow you to go to school while you're on welfare. And you can go as far as a two-year college. Everybody knows what a two-year college degree is. But they're only doing it to the point where now we're in a society where an associate's degree doesn't mean a damn thing. But to go to a four-year college is something that they don't acknowledge. And they're forcing you to go to some so-called back-to-work program, which means we're going to give you an assignment to fill in the 35 hours you're mandated to be working. Since your job is only giving you 15, you have to go to one of our programs for 15 more hours, not to get paid, but to qualify for the peanuts we're already giving you. And guess what? We're going to be teaching you life skills. The life skills include cleaning a park in the summer, cleaning a subway, cleaning the garbage around the neighborhood. because that's going to be really teaching you how to really, really work a business one day in your life. You're really going to know what to do cleaning a subway with rats and garbage. Now, I know a lot of you little smart mouths out there that like messing with me is going to say, well, you're the one who always says to not to look past the bucket and, you know, the mop. Yes, when you're getting paid for it, fools.
Mm-hmm.
Not for you to have to go through another obstacle when you could be a person that understands how to work business but doesn't have a degree. When you want to go to college, but you can't. Because I could guarantee you something. A mother of six does not need life skills in cleaning. Because trust me, brother, she can clean. She's got those life skills already and still ain't paying her. Now what? What about a person that knows how to write? Why aren't you affiliated with newspapers who's offering entry-level jobs for people who can write?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's
right.
Only fast food or cleaning.
Right. All of a sudden. And why is that? You know, that's racist. I'm sorry, not racist. That's classist. Oh, whatever. That's something, isn't it? You know? Isn't it? Isn't it?
I hear you.
So can't nobody deny these things, man.
They make you get up. They'll provide a babysitter. Oh, by the way, you're mandated to find a babysitter within 5 days. And if you don't find a babysitter you're comfortable with, they will sanction you. Sanction means they remove you off the budget and only give you enough money for your children to be on the budget. But you're removed from it. So, by the way, your whole $50 is gone.
By the way.
But for people like us who know how to take that $50 and spend like
$100,
it's a lot. And no matter what they do, how many IRAs they have, how many yacht club funds, Christmas funds, vacation down the line funds, college funds, redeemable IRAs, redeemable CDs that they have, no matter how many banking skills they can do, they never will understand how the hell it is we do what we do.
Never.
They couldn't do it on their best day.
They don't get it right now. How is it that we got the positive growth rate and they don't?
Well, how is it that we're the biggest? How the hell is it that we are the biggest spending people and we don't know how to spend on ourselves? That's what they see. I believe it was Arlene that spoke about that. We are studied by them like lab rats in a damn science lab. They know our every behavior, our mentality as a collective, our mentality as an individual, our mentality towards family values, our mentality towards materialism. They know whatever the hell it is about us that they can get us to lure with, become snitches for each other, on each other with.
Mm-hmm.
Sell somebody out with, cold breed for them if they need be.
Mm-hmm.
And do whatever it takes. They
and
know
the financial institutions specifically study and exploit the black woman. Specifically.
And guess what, fellas and gentlemen and ladies? We're letting it happen.
But you know what? But you
why
know
isn't
what?
Anybody tuning out? Why isn't the black community tuning out of Maury Povich when all of our damn children are being embarrassed as infants and 16-year-olds and 5-year-olds on the air?
But you
not
know
one
what,
of these people are being paid to give their stories up.
I was getting ready to say that. Because for 5 minutes of fame, they'll tell it all. They'll tell it all for 5 minutes of fame and a couple of dollars.
There's no couple of dollars. I think the most that they might do, and I don't even think that, is offer you a free limo ride to the studio.
Yeah, they stick the mic. Because when they be running these polls and statistics, I truly wonder, who are they talking to? When they talk about the poll read, we asked 100 people, what 100 people did you ask? That's not telling us anything. That's saying 100 people. You could have went and asked 100 Caucasians on a black subject.
Yeah, because if you ever play Family Feud, I wonder who the hell the 100 people are that comes up with those top 5 answers.
But you know what? I need to add a little humor to this right now. I would used to wonder why their aptitude testing scores were so high. Because you know what, just from, you know, that gentleman coming on here on the show and saying nigga, 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 he probably got in college for that.
That's why their scores are so high
because they teach them how to spell and how to say nigga real good.
What's the two forms of nigga? What's the two forms of the word nigger? Nigger with an ER and nigger with an A. What are the differences? What are they, homophones? I could see what it was like at the admissions interview. Let's see your scores here. I don't know. You're a little bit below the minimum here. Well, what is it exactly that you did? What's your best subject, English? What's your best word in English, nigger, you're in?
Okay.
Pretty much.
When it comes to the intelligence part,
other side of the fence who don't understand what we mean by this, you have got to live a day in our shoes from your side.
I'm sorry. But you know why I say that too, Katie? Because when we go into these executive buildings, okay, like if you have a lawsuit or you have to hire a lawyer for anything, for any legality or whatever like that, when you go into that office, you see the oldest people in the damn world. The oldest, 87, walking around being a secretary. Seriously? Are you holding the spot for your great nephew? And he don't even have to be qualified. It's just the fact that he's your nephew. Because half of them don't even know what they're doing. When they even talk to you, it's like, you got to tell them what you expected from them. Have you ever went into a high-priced office building and asked somebody a question and they look at you like, duh.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? How did you get here?
Because it's funny because when we think about society for real, the way all the majority American society has to do, supposedly, right, is be associated with a historically racist group, no matter who it is, a bank or a company or a big family, and then they get benefits. They get the benefit of the benefit of the benefit. And yet and still they question us on things like affirmative action. They question us on things that make the most sense. You know, they're trying to get rid of legislation that put this country somewhat at ease at one point. Because we came out there was a depression. There was a depression.
And we let it happen. And we continue to let it happen. Okay? Try to think. Let's try to synchronize around the times, really. I want the next time we meet back here on this panel, okay, I want all of you to have researched and synchronized the time frames from when the Voters' Rights Act was altered to what scandal was going on at the time or what satirical article was being floated around as a popular thing at that moment. I want you guys to do that for me. As well as when this police search warrant law was altered, what you synchronize, check your Facebook dates or check whatever articles on Google you can with that exact timing. Okay? What's the other thing that just took place? When Arizona removed the Black history from the textbooks, you check out and see what was going on. What was Beyonce and Jay-Z doing at the time? What happened with Kanye West? What was going on with Love and Hip Hop? What articles were being floated around and talked about and thought about?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I want you all to do that. I'm dead serious. And I want you guys to reach me before our next segment off the air, and I want you to tell me what it is that you came to. Because I'm telling you that this is what's going on. They are using all of these things because it takes a vicious cycle of time for us to finally just be done with it. And by the time we've gotten there, something major has just been taken away.
Deacon brought up something very important. They have been beefed all about comments or actions made against our president. Matter of fact, I didn't see anybody fighting for this country while Obama's in office, because frankly what I believe they're trying to do is deliberately let it all go to hell so they could blame Obama, they can't wait for him to get out, and they could put some other devil in place to make it all go better for them.
To justify why they throw the election, the next election.
We have another panelist coming in. Hang on a minute. Welcome to the show, Carly, on the air.
How y'all doing? This is Patrick.
Man, hey, I was texting, and I hope I hear from you. What is your take on everything tonight, Patrick?
I've been listening to the discussion as a whole, and you guys are, y'all are rocking. I will say that. y'all have hit on so many different things. I don't even, like, I'm not even really sure where to begin. And that's like a literal statement. Like, that's true. I just wanted to jump on and say, hey, how you doing? And I might hop in at some point, but y'all are rocking. Like, so many different things have been hit on that it really is difficult for me to find a spot to jump in.
Okay, well, let me give you a guidance question. We're talking about the Kanye West and Mike Myers situation. Why I brought it up was this. Mike Myers just now, a week ago, all right, spoke on the fact that the media misread his expression when he was standing next to Kanye at the Hurricane Katrina telethon, okay? And he was saying, you guys got it wrong. My expression wasn't of embarrassment or shock. I was proud to stand next to him because he's the only person who spoke power to the truth when the truth needed to be spoken. Now, the reason why this got me was because here I am going, wait a minute, I haven't heard anything about Kanye lately like this. What happened? I'm looking, expecting to see that I missed something this week. This was him talking about what happened 8 years ago. So then I was like, what the hell is this? Why didn't you just stay shut?
No, but, you know, that would have been a great statement to make.
Maybe hold on a minute, okay? Because there's not much time, and Patrick did come in kind of late. The thing is, Patrick, with me was, when I started to look into, I went back to the original story, then I started seeing all the follow-ups. That's when I started putting all this stuff together. The way that they did it, I watched Kanye's whole entire thing start to finish. Some of them had short clips of just what he said. Some of it had the actual time that Mike Myers was still speaking and then gave the mic to Kanye in full. The man first started off blaming himself for being a hypocrite as well. But nobody mentioned that. Not nobody. As much as I don't like Kanye West, I'm actually proud to say that I like what he stood for in this whole mess. Then he went and actually apologized, supposedly. When I looked at the so-called apology thing, he was clearly holding on to his point, but giving them what they needed to hear. What he said was, I will say that I could be suffering with baby Tourette syndrome. And he said, I will say that at the time of that heat of the moment, I didn't have grounds to infer that George Bush was a racist. To me, he was apologizing for coming out of his own character and stooping to George Bush's level. But that's not what white people heard.
Right.
They were like, oh, he apologized. Yeah, see, we got that one in check. So let's start from there. What do you feel about that?
Oh, well, that's all. You know, when you start talking about black people in the media saying what needs to be said, saying how the majority of black Americans feel, the response from the dominant culture, from the dominant society, is always going to be one of shock and ridicule. And it's not even, I don't even think that it's that what's being said is not expected or not known. Like, I think they know it. I think they don't think that anybody would have the gall to actually say anything. And I think that's where Kanye West makes a lot of people nervous, Because Kanye West is not that he's liable to run off and say some random stuff. I think the thing with Kanye West is he's liable to get in his feelings and say something real.
They don't necessarily want that up.
But
let me ask you, since you brought that, you know, you alluded to it, and I know me, I only asked you now because I know I'll slip with it in a minute. My thing is, I don't think that they didn't expect him to say it at all. I think they knew exactly what the hell they were getting into when they asked him to come in. He's been known. I mean, it was 2006. Kanye's been around before that. He's been known to do so. My question is, if they weren't looking for more attention, a scapegoat, some controversy, to maybe add maybe some more stuff, some more help to their little telethon, they would. If this was just about having a clean-cut fundraiser for a clean-cut purpose, would they have brought somebody in that was more than likely going to cause a problem or an embarrassment? Do you really believe they didn't know what they were getting into when they offered him a leading spot or even an invitation? I'm asking you for real. Do you believe that?
Oh, no, I don't believe it. Of course they knew. I mean, I think if my timeline is right in my head, right before he did that interview and said that, he had made a comment where he said if they rewrite the Bible, they should put him in it or something or another along those lines.
Right, he was God. Because that controversy about Kanye calls himself God. Yes, I remember that. So there's my question there. If you truly gave a damn about these black people drowning in one of the most horrific disasters, okay, you're going to sit there and tell me that there was nothing behind it? Listen, the other thing that I was thinking about too, Lord, please tell me, it didn't slip my head. It was, they brought in Kanye for that. Then they definitely played it up because they knew exactly how to strategically cut off his statement. They cut it off right after he finished saying black people. Bush doesn't care about black people. Just as soon as that happened, Kanye paused, they paused, and then boom, they cut it short and flipped over to none other than another big name, Chris Tucker. They captured the shock. Okay, well, anyway, he didn't know. Everybody knows that Kanye's going to say something off the cuff. So even Chris Tucker's supposedly, and I believe that was practiced, shocked view. Okay, the other thing is, I think that they did bring Kanye West in for the big name thing, but I don't think that was the main reason. Everything was strategically played out like a movie being produced on the street where they yell, cut three times, go back and do it again. Take three, cut, act five, scene 33, take three. Everything seemed rehearsed on that one. And here comes Bush. But go ahead, Patrick.
You know, Katie, and that goes into a lot of what you guys were really rocking on just before I called and broke up the flow unwittingly, is that there is no illusion. The illusion is presented that they care. And anybody with enough sense to look around can see that they don't. Like, I believe that was, is that Arlene or is that Darlene? That's Arlene?
Darlene.
Okay, I apologize.
But
she was speaking about the girl in her neighborhood trying to get money for the girls over in Africa and the situations over there when there are situations right here in America that could be dealt with that nobody wants to deal with, nobody wants to pay any attention to. And then when you guys started talking about the social issues with people getting benefits and getting help, me personally, written curriculums for a lot of those programs to where we would go in and we would teach these people legitimate business skills, legitimate, and give them legitimate certifications that they could use. I remember when Lean Six Sigma was huge. Back in the day, you could have a college degree and a black belt in Lean Six Sigma and get a job making $50,000, or not a college degree, a high school diploma and a Lean Six Sigma black belt and get a job making $50,000 a year starting out. And this was right around the time where we were trying to get out there and teach people about Lean Six Sigma. Nobody wanted that program in any type of institution where it was going to be given to people that were deemed as unprivileged or socially unacceptable or any of those other labels, because those skills would allow them to go into any corporate boardroom and talk lingo to lingo, vocabulary to vocabulary, strategy to strategy, on eye-to-eye level playing field with any business executive in the country, and probably outshine them, because at that time, none of them knew it. But, you know, just the way that program was just shut down, and just, I mean, to say shut down is to say a mouthy. Like the responses we got to that program was just, you wouldn't believe it. And so the assumption that they're putting out, that they actually care, or that they actually want to see us do better, they want to see us be successful, it's all an act. And I think it's all to the point, it's played out nowadays so smooth because they learned so much from the riots and all of the civil unrest and the turmoil that happened in the 60s and the 70s. And if you don't believe, you can go and read the Kerner Commission report. They did a whole report on it where they analyzed down to the minutiae. They analyzed every single detail about the people that were rioting, what they believe caused the riots, the unrest, the educational levels, the music that were playing, the what they were learning in school, what the hot topics were of the day. Like, they broke it all down in their own reports. And that goes back to what you guys were saying earlier about them studying us. They used that information, and now they know how to do things, the same things they were doing back in the day. But now they know how to do it and have us support it. And anytime we might get riled up, here comes distraction tactics. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about yesterday, the satire articles are becoming playing grounds. You know, let me throw this out here and see how they respond.
Okay, I'll go into the front and you go into the back. I'll throw this out there and you go get it. Exactly. You know what else you just said, which makes me, you know, like, you know, you're one of my power heroes, right? So, you know, I thank you for even making it here. But, Patrick, this is my thing. They are studying us. Arlene said that. And, you know, I brought it up. I give full credit to her because it was because of her statement that, like, this really hit me. On top of everything else, that's why I broke down what I believe was the strategy of the satirical articles and all these other things. But I will say this. They do study us. They know exactly what to introduce to us as that dangling carrot on a stick. You know, every time they do something, I imagine the cartoons with the hungry dogs, you know, when they'll smell a steak on a stick and then they close their eyes and they float with the vapor of the smell. Of the you know, that's what I think. That's how I see us. Like, we're just closing our eyes and following the vapors. You understand? Mm-hmm. We need to study us. We need to study us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The way they study us. But we don't need to try to conquer ourselves. We need to start figuring out how the hell we can empower ourselves. And right. I'm going to say for all of you Facebook activists, but butt stuck in the chair activists, that if you know enough to begin a 97-hour chat on social media, then you know enough to be aggravated enough to say that, which means that knowledge is needed in your community, even if it starts with your own damn children. Their way of thinking, their change of fashion, their understanding that, yes, fashion changes like this are supposed to be for fun, not because this is an acceptance tactic for yourself. I'm fighting with my 16-year-old all the time. Pull your pants up. Pull your pants up. I don't want to see your underwear. Pull your pants up. And then I'll watch as he slowly lifts it up just a half an inch higher and stops. I said, you're not finished. I said, don't make me walk behind you in a strange escalator and pull him up for you.
Okay.
Well, you know what, Katie? What you, when it comes to the Facebook activists, my thing is always, You can know the information, but knowing how to apply the information and knowing how to share it with people in a manner that they can digest it and begin to use it is two separate things. And, yeah. And even to that point, a lot of the black scholars are stuck trying to transform black people. Like, that's my big kick. Stop trying to transform black people. Start developing black people. Stop trying to turn us into a white America. Stop trying to turn us into a Jewish America. Stop trying to turn us into other people. Stop trying to transform us. We have our own unique strengths, our own unique attributes, our own unique culture. Even though we're selling our culture all the way around the world, it's still, you know, it's still our culture. We have our own unique things that make us our own unique group. And we need to be developing those attributes instead of trying to, and I think that's the roadblock that a lot of scholars hit. They learn all this European academia, they learn a European way of thinking, and all of a sudden, their model of success, even though they know their model of success shouldn't be the European standard, it is the European standard. So they present all of their facts, they present all of their information from that standpoint. And when it comes to trying to develop somebody that doesn't view themselves the same way that you view them, and you're trying to transform them into something that is not possible to really transform them into, you get frustration on both sides. So I think that's why you have the scholars are frustrated with black America, and black America is frustrated with the scholars, because there's a roadblock there, because the scholars haven't transformed their way of thinking to say, you know what, I was indoctrinated into European society. A lot of the scholars have advanced degrees, and Carter G. Wilson tells us the further you go in education, the more useless you become to the cause. So
you know what?
A lot of them.
Oh, go ahead, honey. I'm sorry.
A lot of them have advanced degrees, and they're indoctrinated into the system, and that's why I think the professor is such a wonderful, special person, because he has those degrees as well, but he still has a separate way of thinking. But they have those degrees, and they're indoctrinated into that way of thinking, and then they're just presenting the facts, but they're presenting them from a poor perspective, from a bad angle. Nobody's receiving anything, and then everything just goes lost in translations, and now you have people that are just you get the rest. I don't even have to elaborate any further. You get it.
We have come a self-destructive black Stepford wife community. All right? We have been controlled. We are all Stepford wives in black. Okay? But the only thing is, they were trained to serve and be submissive and perfect and okay with everything their husband said. We're trained to be okay with them, and we were like little wind-up toys to shoot each other. You guys remember when your kids had like little wind-up G.I. Joe dolls that would go beep, 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 stop or I'll shoot, blah, 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 blah. What the hell are we looking for? I mean, honestly. What the hell are we looking for? How much more of us do we have to even tear apart? And I'm trying to figure out what the hell white America, obviously, we still have something, hidden or otherwise, that they still find valuable enough to keep trying to attack, because they keep coming after us.
Mm-hmm.
The pigs are not going to annihilate us altogether, because who the hell would do their work?
Okay.
You know.
So I'm going to stop that. Go ahead, Deacon. I hear you chiming in.
Oh, no, that
hello?
Was me.
That was
hello, King.
Oh, no,
yeah.
That was you.
And the thing is, I think it, just like Patrick was saying and like you're saying, if we keep looking at the European standard of success, even in the way of our thinking, like you said, the European, we'll analyze, right? We'll call something analysis, but it's really generalization. So instead of analyzation, it's generalization. And then we imitate that same way. Instead of analyzing our own situations and things, a lot of us stray because we start forming our thoughts in generalizations rather than just analyzations, rather than things that can be put into practice. You know, because the generalization of the European doesn't bring forth fruit, it brings forth destruction, and that's what a lot of us mentally are just imitating. Analysis and analyzation and generalization are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Taylor, we got about 9 minutes left, and I got to pose a little exit question, and I'm going to start with Al Tariq. As quickly as possible, what do you think that we should be doing right now? What can we do or ignore or really look into to help us finally put ourselves on the right path or on our feet somehow?
Well, what we have to do is basically what Brother Patrick said, and something that I was glad that you came back around to ask some questions, so I'll cover it right quick. We must, as far as people who have these degrees and stuff, we must use those in self-love. Because if we are teaching in love with these children, these children don't just come to want to know, and as what Professor Carl said yesterday, they felt his concern. So that's what made them want him to come back and everything. That's why their own teachers didn't have the connection that he had, because they felt the sincerity there. He's not there because he has a degree. He's doing it for the love of the people. And that's what's lacking, our people. The love is not greatly there anymore. And when the love is not there, you replace it with other things to substitute for the love, which is not going to be the right thing, because everything was founded in love. So if it's not for the love of it, then it's going to be for the hatred and the destruction of it.
Absolutely. Ooh, ooh. Drop the mic, dude. That was a good one. Absolutely. Deacon, are you there? Okay. I'm going to go to you, Patrick, as the last one coming in. What do you feel? What are some key things you think we can do right now or should do right now or not do?
Key things we can do right now. I agree a lot with what Al Tariq said, adjust your way of thinking. I think one of the big things we can do right now is have a realistic look at where we are. I agree so much with what Al Tariq said, and I'm going to leave it at that, because anywhere else I go, it would be way too long for the amount of time you have left. So I agree a lot with what Al Tariq said.
Okay, Darlene, I'm going to come to you in a minute. Phyllis, I would really like, and Darlene, you as well, I'm trying to see if I could do it maybe in a group chat, but I actually have something I want to pose to you guys after the broadcast, okay, before you guys sign off for the night,
okay.
All right?
Okay.
Darlene, your answer to that, sweetheart.
Well, you know what, Katie, I would just love to say this. Since I have been part of this arena, I have found that connection with people who just don't think with their minds, but they feel with their spirit. And if we continue to hold on to the spirits that we have and not so much follow our mind, because our mind plays tricks on us sometimes, but our heart and our spirit is never wrong. You know, just take what God put in your spirit and do that. And you don't have to be this big willy. Well, I'm going to go out and do. Listen, on a daily basis, you can put a smile on somebody's face every day that God wake you up.
Absolutely.
If you see a hungry person, feed them. If you see a child going astray, talk to them. You know, I mean, we just have to do little things. We have to start with the little things before we can even think about accomplishing anything big. We have to work with, like you said, we have to work on us. So with we, to me, because a lot of times my mind tell me some stuff, and I'm not going to lie, my mind tell me some stuff, but my spirit won't allow me to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I wanted to just add on to this, and then I got about 3 minutes left to hand over to Stalo. But I think that one of the key things we do have to start doing as people who can see and stay above it is start teaching more. But definitely start doing the little things we can do. You know what? Since our society is so afraid to let go of money in any form, then start telling them what they could do that's free that makes such a – it's a small gesture that makes a big relevant impact. Like you said, it costs you nothing to put a smile on someone's face. It costs you nothing to give a kid an encouraging word, which they probably don't hear in their broken home. It costs you nothing to be a person to say, well, let me see what you got. I think I can help you with it.
Right.
You know, and maybe we could start asking those people, if we don't even start it ourselves, that instead of always rewarding the people who already made it there, why don't you start looking at those kids that are on the way but need an extra push? That's what I'd say.
Right.
Anyway, Solo, you got 2 minutes. J-Lo?
Yes.
You got 2 minutes. What do you think we could do now or not do now that will make a positive difference, a relevant difference of us to get started? 2 minutes, go.
You know, right now I just agree with everybody that we just need to reframe our point of thinking and just come from a different angle in everything we do with each other. And focus on each other and focus on teaching the children. So, like, it's just a new time. Like, I mean, I think we should just, like, if we're going to reinvent anything, let it be like the Harlem Renaissance, where we just in this time where we love each other and black is so beautiful. You know what I mean? So that's it.
Well, I too need you to stay up after the broadcast. So, Patrick, thank you for coming in. Al Tariq, thank you for being the first one in tonight. Deacon, I believe that he, you know, that dropped and disconnected. Darlene, as usual. Arlene, I see you there. Hi. And just all of you for being who you are. You know how much I cherish you. I miss the professor. I know he's probably doing something very important because he never misses a show when he can. I want to thank all of my social media supporters out there, those of you that are out there that know what's going on, that refuse to live by what you see, but you read in between the lines. You pass that on. Stop worrying about outsiders because we cannot control what's already been put in place by them from way back when. We're never going to change their way of thinking. We're never going to get anything from them, not by hand out or hand up either. So we need to create that for ourselves. We can't control where we spend. We can't control where we choose to watch our movies. We can't control where we choose to shop for our food, what farmers we choose to get. We can't choose to say, as hard as this is going to be, you know what? Jesus died for me, Martin Luther King marched for me, Malcolm X died for me. Let me do something that I could do for my kids, for my life, for whatever little time we have to enjoy it. So until Monday night, everybody, be blessed. Be blessed and make a difference. I will see you back here on Monday night at 10:30. Good night, everybody. God bless.
Good night. Good night, panel.
Good night.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.